Okay, so good morning, everybody. Today I will discuss the properties, or to be more precise, I will give you an overview of the properties of FEL radiation. I will discuss how we model it, at least one way to model it. And finally, I will focus on the interaction of such radiation with matter, in particular with atoms. This talk can be viewed as, let's say, a continuation of the talk that Professor Labropoulos gave some weeks ago. And I will show you some results we have obtained over the last few weeks. So to start with, let me give you an overview of what one finds usually in standard quantum optics textbooks, that is, the definition and the properties of thermal light. Okay, so thermal light is basically emitted by various sources like stars, excited atomic gases, lamps, and so on. And it is a statistical random process. So this means that basically it is described by means of statistical ensembles. And any statements that can be made about such a source are probabilistic. So this means that they are discussed in terms of statistical averages. Okay, so from now on, I will assume that we have such a thermal light, and it goes through a polarizer, so we obtain a polarized thermal light.
Now, when you say thermal light, do you mean a blackbody spectrum or just a statistical distribution?
No, it does not mean that it follows a Planck distribution. I will explain you in detail what kind of distributions usually you consider, okay? It can be Lorentzian, can be, which is a bit artificial, it can be Gaussian, for example, okay?
If you allow me a comment, there is always confusion, because when people say Planck distribution, they mean the spectrum. That's one thing, okay? But if you take one frequency of that radiation and you study its statistical properties, which is the photon statistics, that's a different issue. And that's what it's referred to here.
Okay.
And that's also called Planck distribution or chaotic field. Right? But it's a different, it's not a Planck distribution of the spectrum.
Okay.
So for example, if we look, so we have, let's say here, a lamp which emits thermal light. We put a polarizer, and we obtain polarized thermal light. And now if one looks at the intensity, let's say, at a particular point r in space at time t, then this is random, it fluctuates, and of course one can define here, if you want, a mean, so this is what we call bithermal light. Now, if we analyze the statistical properties of the intensity and of the light in general, we have the following properties. So, one property is that the electric field is is a complex Gaussian random variable. Okay, so if we look at the electric field, then this fluctuates. And if we look at the distribution, we do some statistics, then this electric field is distributed according to the Gaussian law.
With zero mean.
With, yeah, okay. So, now, the second thing is that what happens if we look at the instantaneous intensity, so the intensity at a particular point r, and at a specific time t. Then this follows an exponential distribution that is p of iota r t is a minus iota. And of course here one can define with some mean, okay? So it is negative exponential distribution. I have to emphasize here that two things. First of all, since it is a complex Gaussian random variable, this means that one can focus only on first order correlation functions in order to describe precisely all the field. One does not have to go to higher order correlation functions. The second thing is that even if we consider a linear filter, an attenuator, for example, on this field, then the statistics do not change. Now, another property that is usually discussed is the concept of stationarity. This is there are various types of stationarity. Strictly speaking, if we consider, for example, the strict stationarity, this means that if we consider the average of a product, let's say, of a random variable, then this depends only. For example, if you have here an average of a product this means that this depends only on x. So, could not repeat it. It is basically a function which depends on the difference. Okay, between T1 and T2, T2 at T3, and so on. And not at the particular times we look at. So, there are other also types of stationarity. Okay, I'm not going to discuss them all of them here, but the essential issue is that if one has a complex Gaussian random variable, then this stationarity turns out to lead to expectation values that do not depend on time at all. So for example, if you look here, the expectation value of iota, then for a stationary chaotic field, this does not depend on time. It is constant. Okay, this is the implication of stationarity. A necessary condition now necessary condition for stationarity is that the field lasts forever. For example, if we look here the intensity, this will go forever, okay, to infinity. Of course, this does not happen in practice. So we have some kind of weaker, let's say, stationarity. And this can be achieved if the pulse duration, so t here is the pulse duration, is much larger than the coherence time. We can define here a coherence time within this, within the time with, where the radiation remains coherent. And then we also look, we monitor, if you want, the system for time delta t, such that delta t is much larger than the coherence time. It's smaller, it's much smaller than the pulse, if we had a pulse, than the duration of the signal.
Can I ask a stupid question? If you have if you have electric field profile or coming from measured electric field profile, how would you determine what the TC is for that profile? So if I give you a profile, how would you calculate TC?
How I can calculate the coherence time?
Yes, it's just a stupid question.
For any profile, of course, one has to analyze the properties. For example, if one has, let's say, the spectral distribution of the source, then from there, from the width of the spectral distribution, by taking the inverse, one can estimate the coherence time.
So you're saying I should take the Fourier transform of my electric field and the inverse of a V will give me TC?
No, not precisely. What I say is the following, that the TC basic, the TC can be obtained from, let's say, the first order correlation function. Okay, if you have the first order correlation function of your electric field.
The decay of the order correlation function.
Sorry?
The decay of the time of order correlation function.
Yes.
Okay.
So you need this, and if you don't have this, you have to go through the spectral distribution of the field. Okay, depends what precisely you give me.
Okay.
So since we wrote it down, let me. Okay, so the coherence time is the let's say the time at which this drops to a particular value, 1 over e of its maximum. And now if you don't have this, then you will have, let's say, the spectral distribution of the field. And from here you will obtain the Fourier transform of G1. T1, T2, okay? And the Fourier transform of G1, or the inverse will give you this and the opposite, okay? And there you can work, okay? But now if you don't have any of this information, I mean the electric field on its own, okay, does not mean anything.
I still have a conceptual question. If you speak about thermal light, normally what you associate with that is that there exists a temperature. So does it mean that your spectrum is given by a Bose distribution? Is it an equilibrium frequency distribution?
No, I mean...
What is the term in your
definition? The thermal light with this particular definition, okay, has these particular properties. It does not, one does not have to assign, for example, any temperature, I mean, at least inherently here. For example, imagine that...
Stationary, I think that would be enough, so why should it be thermal?
If it is stationary, I mean, for example, consider a gas of atoms, okay? And now, the only that you have to introduce in your model, these atoms, let's say, emit light, okay? They collide simultaneously. This collision, of course, means that the gas is in a particular temperature, okay? So what to describe here is the formula. These collisions, somehow, will modulate the electric field that goes out from the gas, okay? And it will modulate the electric field in a random way. This randomness is what we try to describe here. Yes?
Yeah. Temperature, this goes back to what I said earlier. The temperature tells you what the spectrum looks like, where the peak is. No matter what the temperature is, as long as you are in thermal equilibrium, then no matter what the temperature is, if you take one frequency, the statistics is always what it describes.
Under thermal, you understand an equilibrium.
Pardon?
Under thermal, you understand an equilibrium condition.
Of course, yeah. Sure. Just to point a bit ahead, now why the FEL, if and why the FEL can be described by something like that, is something that will be discussed, okay?
Okay, so another fourth property is that basically the field is homogeneous. This is, let's say, the corresponding of stationarity in the transverse components. That is, for example, you can view it as the following. Iota r perpendicular is a constant. it does not vary with the transverse degrees of freedoms. Like here, we said that stationarity implies that this does not vary with time. Okay? And finally, a fifth property is ergodicity, which basically means that if we take, let's say, different shots, different trajectories, or different realizations, as we call them, of the field, then it is sufficient to look one of them only. This one describes anyone, describes accurately all the ensemble. And this allows us to convert basically average distribution, average quantities over ensembles to time integrals, integrals over time. Okay, so this is just what one finds in the books. And now, so what do we know about FEL radiation? Of course, there are many papers around the main theoretical models. Yes?
Sorry, just to give me an idea, under which conditions one can assume the source will have these properties?
First of all, the stationarity.
I'm talking about the lab. So if I'm in the lab and I'm looking at the source.
Yes.
So under which conditions I can assume that this will be the properties?
Well, I mean, you have to analyze the.
I know,
for example, the station.
If I have a femtosecond laser, this will not apply, right?
Of course not. So, I mean, the light from the laser is not.
Lamp, this will apply.
Yes,
so,
probably.
In between, under which conditions I can or cannot assume that this will apply?
I don't think that there are particular guide. I mean, you analyze your field. Certainly, the stationarity condition is clear. Okay. The stationarity condition is clear. The ergodicity is the more strict condition. Probably, you will not get it easily. It's more, it's very tough to get, because this means that one realization, one look at your system, represents whatever you do later on, any other, So. Homogeneity here means that your system basically emits in all possible directions. If you have some kind of directionality, this probably does not hold. Okay? Now what else? Now about the intensity of the electric field. Well, I don't know there. It depends really on your system. Certainly it's not a laser. It could be, for example, some kind of super radiance and so on system. If you have an excited atomic gas, okay, probably it will go in this way.
And the reason it can't be a laser is because of this exponential die-off of the autocorrelation function. I mean, could it be a flickering laser?
Hey, what?
Say you had a badly performing laser that's flickering. Would that qualify?
I don't know if this means that basically what that you have pulsed one or what, or you modify the frequencies, or it is the bandwidth that you affect.
Well, like say I'm just thinking of something, but say that your gain medium wasn't very good, or that you weren't getting at the inverted population very well, and so your laser light is flickering. Would that qualify if you had this exponential
die? I guess in the one extreme, if it is really a bad laser, so it's in the limit of spontaneous emission or whatever, okay, so you don't have any stimulated stuff there. Mm-hmm. So of course it's one extreme is here. Now the other extreme is a very good laser, which does not apply here. In between, you have perhaps something strange.
Well, in the old days, there were the flash lamp pump dye lasers.
Mm.
They were more or less like what you say.
Okay? Uh-huh.
But even earlier, back in the 60s, people took a laser, a well-stabilized helium neon laser,
mm-hmm.
Arecchi did that. They passed it through a rotating ground glass disc,
mm-hmm.
and on the other side, they got thermal light.
Oh.
We check that by looking at the second order correlation for this factor of 2.
So like maybe laser speckle would have this, or
speckle
or something kind of variant.
I don't know enough about the mechanics of speckle to make a meaningful comment. Probably, but some of this.
Okay, so now the FEL starts with a bunch of electrons, which basically enter the ondulator. These electrons, now the idea is from that these electrons have been emitted at randomly, and so this means that we have a density which fluctuates both in time and in space. So these electrons now are the ondulator, and what happens there? They start radiating spontaneously at the beginning. Okay. Then this radiation, due basically to the geometry of the system and so on, acts back on the electrons and bunches them more. These bunch electrons radiate then coherently, which means that they tend to, because they are very close to each other, to cooperate somehow. Okay. They amplify the co-propagating because the field mainly propagates along the direction of the beam propagation. And this is basically stimulated emission, okay? And now, of course, at the end, because, as I said, of the geometry of the system, frequencies close to a central frequency, which is determined by the geometry of the system, is what is amplified more. The other frequencies die out slowly, okay? So the essential effect here is that we have amplification from a noisy spontaneous emission, okay? For example, here, if we had, let's say, 10 to the n radiators, electrons, atoms, and so on, does not matter, then one can show that if these were individual emitters, then the emitted, let's say, intensity scale is like a number of electrons. But now, here scales quadratically with the number of electrons, which is really a huge amplification. And here is a typical, let's say, a plot from the facilities in Germany. As you see, we start from a cloud here of electrons, and here this grating is basically the formation of the bunches I mentioned before, okay, as the beam propagates along the ondulator. And we have here an exponential, let's say, growth. This is basically the linear regime. And here, of course, at the end, we have some saturation, and then the system can continue if we want.
What is on the vertical axis, the E field? Or?
This is measured in joule. It is basically energy. Okay.
What is your number?
This is zeta. This is what you mean?
No, you have lambda. What is confined in lambda? What is lambda here?
Lambda is basically the central frequency. Or if you want, I hear what I mean. It is basically the wavelength of radiation, okay? What the central frequency that we want to obtain. And basically, these bunches here are confined within these small, the electrons are confined within such small space. And that's why they radiate in a cooperative way. If you don't have the particles confined in a space with dimensions comparable to the wavelength of radiation, then they do not cooperate. You don't get this enhancement.
For kV radiation, it means about 10 Bohr. So how many particles do you get there?
You can calculate, take the number of roughly.
I'm wondering about because you cannot really bring electrons that close easily, right?
Yeah, I mean, you don't bring them. They just come because of the modulation.
But I'm completely confused. Are you saying that your bunch has to be within one wavelength of radiation?
The initial electron, let's say, configuration, okay, is much larger. Let's say it's of the order of picosecond, okay? And now, what happens gradually is because I don't have here the transparency. What happens is because of, let's say, the emitted radiation acts back on the system. Okay, it forces them. So you have, let's say, a huge ensemble like this. Okay, it's a train, and then the forces act in this way, in this way, in this way, this at this particular point of concentration, the electrons bunch together. Okay, and you can show that this is of the order of wavelength of light.
Item number two. What you just said is in two. Radiation.
Yes, yes, yes. If you want, I can show you later.
I think Robin gave a good picture of that. It's not the electrons are not bunched in a wavelength corresponding to a kilo electron volt. So because you start with the wavelength of the undulator, which is something like 10 centimeters or
yeah.
I don't know.
Okay.
And then the electrons move almost the speed of light. So they have in their rest frame a modulation of, I don't know, micrometers. Yeah, they are bunched, and then you still have the relativistic Doppler effect, which makes the emitted radiation even smaller. So bunching in on micrometers, I think, is possible for these numbers.
Anyway, but I mean, the idea here is that if you don't, let's say you are not able to bunch the emitters, okay, within such a long distance, the system will not work. So I'm afraid somehow the centers. If you want, I have another plot from some experimental papers. But this is really experimental detail. Okay, from my point of view, the system, in order to have super radiance, the emitters have to be confined in the order of the wavelength of light. This is a well-known thing. Now the details how this is achieved, I cannot really mention more. Okay, so and then so the idea here is that you have this exponential growth, as I mentioned before, of the intensity with the length of the undulator. Okay. So now, if we focus basically for our purposes on this linearism here, okay, here more difficult things happen, so I'm not going to discuss it. And so, it can be shown that for this linear regime, the electric field is a complex Gaussian random variable as before. Okay. The second now is that what happens if we look at the outgoing light? And here, as you see, we have pulses which exhibit spikes, both in time and in wavelength, in frequency. If we analyze these pulses, then or if you want, the theory shows that these basically pulses have some duration of the order of the coherence time. And we have here, of course, a duration for each pulse, which is, let's say, T capital. And then if one takes the Fourier transform to go in the frequency domain, then the coherence time here determines this width. And the pulse duration determines basically the smaller spikes that you see here. Okay. Here is basically the average over these five, four, how many they are, okay, number of pulses. And I want to keep you for a while in your mind that this profile has a particular shape, okay, and it is within a particular time window. Now, if we look at the instantaneous intensity, then this is exponentially distributed. I think I have So again, it's this law here. Just I have divided with the average intensity, so it's a negative exponential distribution. And if we look now, if we analyze many pulses, what is the energy per pulse? Then again, we get a distribution, Now it is a gamma distribution. It is given by this form. And here again, I have defined this W tilde, which is the energy over the average, let's say, energy. And here, M is, let's say, something like the number of modes that contribute. And this distribution has a property that if you look at the system for in this limit, that is, you have M, if you have M much larger than 1, then it goes to a Gaussian. And if you look for this M much smaller than 1, then what you get is the exponential distribution again.
So George, could you just go back one?
Yes. Here, yeah.
Oh, actually, one more slide.
Yes.
Sorry. Look again, what are the light individual curves?
What are the individual curves? It's basically the FEL pulse produces, the FEL, let's say, facility produces pulses. And if you look at each pulse of them separately, one might look like this, the other pulse might look like this, and so on. Individual shots. Yeah? And now each one of them will interact with your system, if it is atoms or material or whatever. Yeah? You cannot predict in advance which profile you will get. Of course, I know that there are efforts in order to get rid of such things and to make something really more deterministic. But
okay, can I think of M as the number of bunches bunches of electrons?
There is now, to be honest, I was also very confused because there is a terminology of electron bunch, what enters the undulator. There is also the terminology of micro bunches, which are formed. Yeah, yes. So basically, the idea is the following, that these are basically, you can view them as different, let's say, envelopes which overlap, right? And each one of these envelopes comes, let's say, from a coherent region, like from a microbunch. And of course, this is the coherence time width. Yeah. And now here, again, this is basically the number of modes. If you can view the radiation as if it comes from different coherent sources. And this, each of these sources are the modes. Yeah. So I guess roughly, yes, you can say that.
That's all from this reference?
Yes, yes. These are experimental data.
Can you check? It's probably not nature one. Is it volume one? Is it nature photonics, maybe?
Yeah, it's unlikely to be volume one of nature.
It's nature photonics, yeah, sorry. Yes, okay, sorry. Yeah, it starts 2007, so.
It must have been inaugurated back in Victoria, right? Like the first British free lecture, please.
Okay. So now, as far as the other two, three properties are concerned, first of all, the field is not stationary. Remember here what I said, that since we have a Gaussian complex random variable, right? Then stationarity leads to averages which do not depend in time, right? So if you look at this, it should not depend in time. But here, what I showed you is that the average really depends on time, okay? It is a time-varying, let's say, average with width that is determined by, it is of the order of the width of each FEL pulse separately, yeah? And of course, I think it is clear we don't have ergodicity. And now about now
is it do or do not?
Do not.
No ergodicity.
No. Yeah. Sorry. So and now, as far as homogeneity is concerned, again, well, it's not homogeneous, it's not completely incoherent either. For example, here in FEL facilities, you have high directionality of the beam. So immediately this does not imply homogeneity. Okay.
Distinguish between isotropy and homogeneity. So you talk about isotropy.
No, what I say, well, in this definition, at least from people I have found again on an FEL facilities, what they define, they talk about whether, let's say, if you look at the transverse directions, whether somehow you can claim that the intensity is a constant. Yeah, does not change with. This is again from this work. Yeah. All this discussion is analytic. In some papers by Saldin and co-workers, they have been working on the really simulation of the FEL facilities for many, many years, since 90s. And they have really a complete theory here. Okay, but from for our purposes, what we wanted is basically what are the properties of FEL radiation. And what we keep here is that we have an electric field which is a Gaussian complex random variable in the linearism always, and that we have the spiky pulses, we have an exponential distribution of iota, and now non-stationarity means, and of course we have non-stationarity and no ergodicity. So this means that we have to work with statistical ensembles. We are not allowed to make any further simplifications, to substitute averages with time integrals and so on. Okay, so from now on, when I use brackets, it means that these are averages over many realizations or many pulses, if you want, pulses like what I showed you before, with which are spiky. Okay.
So are you going to talk about the probability distributions, say, of the pulse length, pulse height?
No, I'm not going to.
Is that all worked out?
I think people do not discuss this issue. I have not seen any literature on this. Yeah. What is, you mean the pulse duration, perhaps around the center, and what is the number of peaks and so on? What is the distribution? I don't know. Usually they discuss the energy per pulse, the intensity distribution, because it turns out, I can show you that this is basically what affects at least the system we have, or the systems we have looked at, because you do average over many realizations. So whether one, let's say, pulse had three spikes, the other had four, the other had five, the other had two, really does not matter at the end, okay? The energy matters, how the energy is distributed, of course, okay? Because the energy is what will determine the ion yield, and so on.
Okay, I thought that the spikes have some time delay to each other, don't they?
So you mean, if you look at different pulses, yes, there is a delay between them, it's a train.
Same pulse, there are several spikes.
Yes.
The spikes are also delayed to each other.
If they have to be distinct, yes, they are delayed. Otherwise, it's
random.
It's random. Of course, you can define some average delay if you want. Because if this is of the order of the coherence time, and you have some pulse duration, if you divide the two, you get some height of some type of delay of time window. So, but this is completely random. Okay, that's why people this.
Otherwise, it would be perfect.
It's not
random. Yeah. It's one of the top of the other. Yeah, sure. I mean.
No. They are random. The heights of the peaks, as well as the separation between the spikes, that's what you're referring to.
Yes.
Excuse me, Rick. One issue is whether you have 100 spikes or 3 or 5 spikes. What I learned this 7 weeks by talking to experimentalists, it looks like there are few spikes. 3, 5, 7, 10.
So even the number of spikes is random.
Yes, sure.
So it's not enough. The number of spikes is not sufficient to make statistics. It a single spike, that's what you want to say.
Yeah,
100 spikes in a pulse, you could already per pulse.
Well, yes, if you apply, if you had some type of ergodicity, yeah, or stationarity, and so on, but here do not apply. Even I think for 100, it would be really risky. Okay? This would mean that this single pulse represents 10,000 pulses. The statistics on 10,000 pulses. But this is not, I don't think that this is true, even if you consider 1,000 spikes. Okay, so now I'm going to briefly discuss how we simulate such a noise. That I emphasize once more, these are the properties we are interested in. Okay, we are not going to model from scratch all the FEL source like Saldin and co-workers do and the other programs which are already available to these people. We focus on the particular properties. Okay, and here I will introduce from my, let's say, education, what we call white Gaussian noise. So this means that we have a random variable which is Gaussian distributed. With some mean, and of course you have also some variance, because now this is complex. Okay, it's defined by this way. And now the fact that this is white means that this is proportional. Sorry, I forgot the prime here. This is proportional to delta t minus t prime. So it is delta correlated. Okay. And in order to produce such a noise, there are standard methods. I think it's written like this, perhaps with double Box-Miller method. You can find this method everywhere. Implement, you just call it, and it produces such a kind of variable. If you analyze the details of the variable, then you will see that this happened. The mean can be defined. And here, this is fixed. It's a delta function. Yeah?
So how then is this justified?
How?
How then is this justified for the entry elements that it's...
No. This is, I need it. I don't say that the FEL is something like this, okay? I just say that I need it in order to simulate the FEL, okay? It's an intermediate step for my numerical simulations. So now I will call okay, that here colored means basically the same as before, but here can be any function. Okay? So if you look the correlation function, let's say, of this variable that you are producing in your computer, then this is not delta correlated. It has some distribution. I will show you now results. Okay? Okay, so now why I need it? Because this is as I told you, trivial in the sense you can find it everywhere. Numerical recipes in any standard library. But here, this is not an easy task. And in order to produce such a noise, at least I'm aware of three papers. Okay, the two of them basically coincide with the same thing. Physics is repeated sometimes. So the one is limited only to producing such thing with an exponential decay here. And the other can produce any correlation function. And this is now what I am going to describe you briefly, the method Okay, that will give you also the reference in case you want to look at it closer. Okay, so the method also has some really nice physical intuition. So the idea is the following. We have, let's say, a large number of emitters, like we have also in this system, and so on. Okay. So we are B. Here is 3C, okay? So we have a large number of emitters, and now a large number of particles, can be atoms, electrons, and so on, and they emit okay, so this means basically that there we can assume that there is a central frequency, omega naught, okay, and then the kth radiator, okay, emits at omega k, which is omega naught plus k delta omega, where k is minus whatever, infinity plus infinity, okay? It takes both positive and negative values, okay? So the kth radiator has a fixed frequency, which does not vary. This is what I mean, well-defined frequency for each radiator separately, okay? But if you look to different radiators, does not mean that they have the same frequency of emission. Now, they have well-defined amplitude. Okay, this is now for all radiators. The other thing is that they have well-defined polarization. Again, all radiators. And now the phase of the emitted radiation is uniformly distributed. Between 0 and 2 pi. Okay?
Well defined means all the same, or they can be different.
Sorry, what? Here?
Well, yeah, those two well defined states.
Yes, that for example you have, let's say if you look at the field that goes, I think the next relation will answer your. So if you look now what frequency. Okay, let me draw something. So if you look now the field that comes out for a particular radiator, let's say the radiator K, then let's say it has a particular frequency, okay, and a particular polarization, right? And now if you look at a particular amplitude here, right? Now if you look for the radiator K plus 1, this will probably, does not mean necessarily, okay, can be the same, or it can be certainly a different frequency. The polarization will be the same, but the amplitude will be epsilon naught, as here. These are equal, okay? The polarization is the same, but the frequency varies. So now if you look, what is the electric field that it is emitted at a particular frequency, omega k? So this is the amplitude, which is common, let's say, this means for if you have an ensemble, let's say, of n emitters, a number of emitters, a smaller number, but still large, very large, okay, will emit at the same frequency, yes? And then you collect all these guys together. Here is a random variable, okay, because it contributes for the fact that you have a uniformly distributed phase. This is the amplitude, which is constant. the polarization I drop is constant everywhere, and this is the electric field for all the emitters at a particular omega k. There are also another group of emitters at the frequency omega k plus 1, and so on. But here this is due to the random phase. Yeah? This now, because you assume that you have infinitely many emitters, from which infinitely many also emit at a particular frequency, you can apply the central limit theorem, and then you can show that this is basically a Gaussian complex random variable. Is zero, and now okay. And now this is some correlation function, okay? I said before that it will not be delta function. So I can put it as I want. For our purposes, what we do? We say that we want to simulate some radiation which has a particular spectral distribution. And we use it here. Okay, so we put here S omega k delta KL, and now I introduce also a grid in frequency space. Okay. Now the tricky point here is that we introduce the spectral distribution. Why we do that, I will show you now why. Okay? In principle, this could be whatever. Okay? Now if you take the field from all the emitters, for all possible frequencies and so on, then epsilon.
There's no time dependence left in the Xi?
Yeah, there is here. Okay, I just in Xi? No, no. This is just the it is in the phase which fluctuates from emitter to emitter.
It'd be a number, but it'll be different from emitter to emitter.
Yes. So if you collect all of them together, it will give you a variable. And because there are many emitters, the central limit theorem tells you that this will go to a Gaussian random variable. Okay? And now, it's a model. Again, it's a model. Okay? It's a model which does something, what I show you, with some plots. Okay? So now if you collect all these terms, the total electric field at all possible frequencies at a particular time t now is what? Sum over k, sum over all possible frequencies from minus infinity to infinity. Okay. And now you can see, because of this sum, you have also this here. You will sum over these exponentials times Xi k. This is the Fourier transform of Xi k. Yeah? And because Xi k is a Gaussian random variable, the Fourier transform will be also a new variable, which is still Gaussian. But now if you look at the correlation, so the new Gaussian variable will have similar properties like this. But if you look at the correlation function, it will be now in the conjugate space, let's say in the time domain. This is in frequency domain, yeah? The Fourier transform will take you in the time domain, and if you look now at the correlation, it will be the Fourier transform of this. So that's why I introduced here the spectrum, because automatically I get a new random variable with a Fourier transform of the spectrum as a correlation function. So if I define in my simulations the spectrum, I start, let's say, from a Lorentzian or from a Gaussian, this will determine whether the random variable that I will obtain will have an exponential or a Gaussian correlation function. This is more or less the idea, and it can be found in these papers. Hope this time the references are correct. Okay, so it is. 19, 5, 4, 8, 80, at 80. Okay, it's basically, I think, the same idea, okay? Just repeat it in after 10 years, okay? Okay, so this is, for our purposes, how we simulate such a type of radiation. And I can show you now some results, okay? Let us suppose that we start from two different line shapes. One, let's say, is Lorentzian, it has these long tails, and the other is Gaussian. Yeah? The same coherence time, 2 femtosecond. Okay. So this will determine determine this quantity here when we work in a frequency domain. Then we take the Fourier transform, the fast Fourier transform we take in the time domain. And here is what we get. This is the electric field, the imaginary real part. This is the distribution. It's a complex Gaussian random variable, as we want it. Okay. And here are now the pulses. So what we do, if we don't truncate the syncret, let's say, the program run forever. As long as there is no repetition, let's say, in your code, this will go forever. But now, because we want to simulate pulses, we put an envelope on the top of that so that we cut this down. Yeah. So there are also the main peaks here, the main spikes. They are also very fast ones. Okay. It turns out that this is basically due to the Lorentzian profile. It's some mathematical properties which lead to such faster variations. Okay. So now you also see that as one increases the coherence time, then the main peaks become broader and broader, as we expected. Okay. And now in the Gaussian spectral line width, again the same idea. Now you don't have these fast, very fast variations. And again, as you increase the coherence time, then the width, the mean width, let's say, of the peaks increases, as you see here. Okay. So for example, here I have started with a pulse which has, let's say, roughly 10, 15 spikes. I went to a pulse which has 5, more or less, and here, okay? And now, this is what I have done here. So I check the convergence of the program. And as you see, as I increase the number of shots, the number of realizations or trajectories, then I converge to the deterministic pulse I use in order to shape, okay? My signal. And again, in Gaussian, it's much clearer because you have less variations. And now if we look at the correlation function, since I have used Lorentzian spectral line width, I expect here an exponential decay with a decay rate of the order of Tc minus 1, where Tc is the coherence time. And here is 4,000 at 5,000 trajectories. And the solid line, you can see it hopefully. The solid line is basically the exact expression, what I expect. It is in very good agreement here. And of course, as time goes on, you have some small variations. I have to emphasize here that because this is a second moment, the convergence is slower than it was for intensity, which for 1,000 trajectories, the convergence is rather good. While here you see for 5,000 trajectories, they are still okay. And now if you look at the Gaussian spectral line width, which is what I'm going to use from now on, again, one expects now a correlation function which is a Gaussian. The width is determined from the coherence time again. So here are the numerical simulations which are in good agreement with the exact solution. And you have some variations here for larger times. Now we looked at the distribution of the pulses that we produce as far as energy intensity is concerned. So the energy is, again, you see here the fits. These are my numerical results. The fits are in very good agreement with the numerical results. And if I change it somehow, in order, I change this integral in order to change m to see how this behaves. This is again the other extreme for very large m. It's a Gaussian. And if I look at the distribution of the instantaneous intensity, this is exponential distribution as I want it. Okay? So I have a random variable which has all the essential properties. Okay? Energy distribution, electric field. Okay, and now it's time to apply this on atoms. Okay? Consider first the case where we have a simple model. Assume that we have, let's say, a number of atoms, a node of some type alpha. Okay, this ensemble here interacts with such a type of radiation, and then we go to a higher ion, which process involves the absorption of, as I denote it here, R photons. So it's an R photon process. Some weeks ago, Professor Labropoulos discussed here the conditions under which perturbation theory is valid. For the particular FEL radiation, it is valid. And so we can write down rate equations regarding the population of a neutral atom. We can define, of course, a cross section. And here F is the flux of photons, which depends on the intensity. So it's a random thing, right? And now if.
Time dependent.
Sorry?
You want to put that time dependent.
Okay, yeah, sure. Why not? But yeah, everywhere. Thanks. So now, if N1 is the population of the ion, it will be this rate equation, of course. I think I have defined all the variables here. If I have forgotten something, let me know. And now, what happens if we look at how the ion yield changes with the peak intensity. Okay? So, this is the ion yield, N1, as a function of the peak intensity. And here I have changed R. Here is for a single photon process, two photon process, three photon process, and so on. Yes? The solid line is for the deterministic pulse I use in order to shape my signal. And here is for a chaotic pulse, it is an average over 100 pulses. It's a small number, I know, but it shows what I want. So, first of all, for single photon process, both results basically coincide. And you see that as I increase R, which means that I increase nonlinearity here, okay, then you see that the chaotic result is getting much higher than the deterministic result. Okay? So this means that fluctuations basically tend to enhance these nonlinear processes.
Presumably the ratio is R factorial, right?
Yes, correct. And I guess you can show immediately how this, why this is R factorial. If you integrate this formally, you will obtain that N1 is something like this. And now this, as I told you, fluctuates for each trajectory.
That's the F, right?
No, it's just proportional.
Ah, okay.
I don't say that, I'm not going to write all the parameters. Yeah, because I discussed the fluctuations in intensity to avoid confusion. Yeah. So this is just proportional to this. Okay? And now what I plot here with the stars is basically an average. So this means I have to define here average over many ensembles now. It has nothing to do with time. So it goes inside here. Yeah? And now I showed you that This instantaneous intensity follows exponential distribution. So I can really say that iota t of r is basically an integral. Yeah, I have dropped time just here, okay? It is an ensemble average, okay? Here is the distribution of the instantaneous iota of t. Yes? And now this is R factorial. I think I wrote everything correctly. And now this goes back here. But here, because this by construction converges to the deterministic pulse, you get R factorial times the solid line. Yes? And this result does not depend, of course, on whether one has a Lorentzian or Gaussian distributed, the spectral now distribution.
I'm sorry, on that last line, I'm still not getting where the R factorial comes from.
Ah, it's this integral. This is the distribution which is minus iota over iota mean. And this is iota of R. This integral is R factorial times this iota. By definition, you can find it on standard tables.
Okay,
and now, this was a very simple, let's say, example, because it involves just the transition from A to A plus N, a direct one. And now let us consider a more realistic scenario. That is ionization of new 93 V. Okay, so basically the valence electrons for the neon, we have 6 in the 2P and 1 in the 2S state. Yes? So now, if we again consider perturbation theory, we have a number of rate equations. Instead of writing them, let me first, I hope it works. Okay, I made a scheme this morning. Okay, great. So what we have here is the following. This is the neutral neon. And the rate equations basically involve the following. One photon transition from neon to neon plus, from neon plus, neon double plus, and then from here to from 3 plus to 4 plus, we need 2 photons, and here we need 3 photons, okay? This red path, as you see, it goes successively with the ejection of one electron. One electron from here to here, from here to here, from here to here, and so on, okay? So this is the sequential path. On the other hand, we have also terms which involve direct transitions. Of course, from neon to neon plus is the same, it's trivial. But now it can also go from neon to neon double plus with two photons, from neon to neon 3 plus with three photons, and so on. And here you see up to this point the number of photons basically, I hope it's correct, yeah. And then it goes 8 photons and 11 photons, okay? For the ejection of 8 electrons.
Oh, there's a mistake there.
Yes, probably.
6 photons, you go to neon 6 plus.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway, yeah, so.
Up to neon 6 plus, you go with the number of photons of the charge multiplicity, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yes, this is what I remember.
From 6 to 7, and from 7 to 8, that becomes 8 and 11.
Yes. Yeah, that's what
it is.
For 7,
yeah. That's correct. It's on the other side.
Sorry. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, sorry. You are right. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, these are. So now. Okay, so the transition was smooth. So now, basically, I can write a rather complicated form of the rate equations, but I think it combines everything, all these transitions. This is the most complicated equation I'm going to write today. So, 0. Plus sigma j minus 1 j n j minus 1 j f n j minus 1 j n j minus 1 and minus sigma j j plus 1 j plus 1 f n j plus 1 j and j theta 7 minus j. So this is the cross section from 0, from the neutral to the jth ion. It involves in general n photons, n0j. Okay, this is again the flux. Now this is the cross section from the j minus 1 to j. It involves this number of photons. This is the cross section from j to j plus 1. It involves this number of photons. This is just the term in order to avoid double counting, okay, in my equations. This is just a theta function, okay, Heaviside function. So now we observe the following.
So you assume that you cannot go by, you cannot jump over charge state if your initial state is not the neutral, because what you have here is for any charge state you can come back from the neutral.
Yes.
Or you can come from the previous charge
yes.
state, or you can leave to the next charge state.
Yes.
But in principle, you can also come from say charge state which is different by 2. And leave to a charge state, which is different by 2 directly.
By Jose, you mean? By Jose, you mean?
Not necessarily, just by absorption. Let's say you have a single charge.
Yes.
And in principle, you can also go from that to a triple charge. That is not in this rate equation, right? That process.
So the ejection of 2 electrons, you mean?
No,
right?
No, I mean absorption of 2 photons by a singly charged. Leading to
where?
That is not that, right?
That's the one.
So if you show the ladder again, yeah. Because
now, okay, it's clear. Yeah. So you are saying, for example, okay, let me answer your question. You are here, right?
Yeah.
And you want to go where?
To 3 plus.
To 3 plus.
Yeah.
Via how many photons? So this is 2 electron ejection. How many photons? or a Z process, or how? How do you want to go there? Well, Z process here is not included.
He's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are many, many, many more processes. In principle, from any of those species with the appropriate number of photons,
and
you can jump,
there.
I would say, okay? All right. So, in principle, and there are infinitely many paths like that. And
so you're simply assuming that the intermediate populations are relatively small compared to when you
Yeah, go. That's right.
That's the assumption.
Yeah. I don't think I have a definitive answer yet, but basically what happens here is that initially the system is in the ground state. The sequential channels are the ones that are the strongest.
Yeah.
Okay. And as long as you have the population, then you get very few during the pulse. You get very little population with the other ions. So for the process you're talking about to play a role.
So it's basically you're making a steady state approximation.
It's what?
The state is called the steady state approximation.
No, steady why steady state?
No. Well, in chemical kinetics, if I were doing the same thing in chemical kinetics,
yeah.
I would make a steady state approximation where I would assume
no.
The intermediate populations are changing slowly in time.
I think
the Yeats model that other processes are faster.
I think
it's not steady state.
The
problem is solved for the particular pulse. And one of the points that will be shown is that the shorter the pulse, the it makes a difference whether this direct charge contributes or not. Okay? So there is no steady state involved. What is involved is what you say, that one could put many, many, many more processes there, which multiphoton from the ions, but what you will find is that under the conditions you are talking about, past duration and intestines and so on, do not make much of a contribution. Okay? But
for other channels, the Nj will be too small. Nj or the cross section.
Yeah.
One of them will be.
That's why I tried. I try to specify because sometimes, well.
I'm sorry. These other channels are not in there.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, he likes to write these things in this compact form, which is not very transparent. I like to show all the equations, and then the terms that Sergei is talking about are not in there.
Yes, not
okay. Yeah.
What is in there is exactly what's in this graph with the appropriate cross sections. Okay?
Okay. So, okay. So, what we have here is the following. We have this term. This is this refers to the direct processes. They are all together, okay? But these are now the sequential ones. Okay, so now let us see what we obtain if we assume a deterministic pulse first, just to get some intuition. So I will consider first a pulse of duration 30 femtosecond. Here are the ion yields as a function of peak intensity. And the symbols again are the yields when only sequential. So I have dropped this term here, okay? I have dropped this term, and I have left only these terms, okay, to see what's happened. And now the lines are really when both sequential and direct are included. So as you see here, for the first ions, there is basically no difference. And the reason is because we go via a single photon there. But here, as you see, it makes some difference, but still, the differences that you see are not very big, okay? So this means basically that the direct processes are not really playing a very big role. Okay? And if I look now for 50 or 100 femtosecond, what will happen? That these deviations here will appear at smaller and smaller intensities, or if you want, at very small yields, okay, which are not of really great importance. Now, what happens if I make this path duration smaller? Here, of course, again, does not make big difference, but here, as you see, we have a large enhancement when the direct processes are included, okay, relative to the sequential ones only. So it seems that in order to observe someone, the direct paths, the path duration has to be sufficiently small. Okay, it is only then that one can observe the direct paths. And an idea is the following, that if the path is not so short, then what happens is that as it grows, then electrons are ejected from the valence electrons are ejected gradually, and by the time the pulse has reached its peak, the atom basically the valence electrons have been removed. The atom is ns1s squared, and it basically cannot feel the radiation, cannot produce the direct paths. If, however, the path is very short, then what will happen? It will reach its peak very fast, and then the atom, the neutral atoms, okay, because the direct processes are fed by the neutral atom, then they will feel really the peak of the radiation. Okay. So now, what happens if we go to chaotic pulses? This is a duration of 30 femtosecond. And as you see here, there is an enhancement. These now, the lines are average yields. I have used 10,000 chaotic pulses. The symbols are for the deterministic pulse. As you see here, there is an enhancement, okay, like the R factorial. Of course, it's not R factorial now because we have a set of coupled differential equations. So it is R factorial modified, okay? And you see here this enhancement is really big. If we go to 5 femtosecond, again the enhancement is clear. You go from here to here, you here to here, and so on. From big ions, the enhancement is really huge. And also note that it does not make really a big difference whether one is 5 or 30 femtosecond. In the sense that in both cases you can observe this enhancement, okay? So another issue that I would like to address here is the following: whether you can describe this enhancement, which comes from averaging over many chaotic pulses, somehow via deterministic equations, okay? So what one may consider is the following: the same set of equations, yes, but now modifying here the cross sections. Let's say, okay, this is an n photon process, I will add here n factorial, okay? And then I don't do any average, I don't use any chaotic pulses and so on. Here I just use the deterministic pulse, which is the average of the many ensemble pulses. So what I will get is the following. For 30 femtosecond, you see now the symbols are these equations with modified cross sections, and the lines are basically the average yields is the chaotic solution, averaged over 10,000 chaotic pulses. As you see here, the difference is not big. Okay, there are some at least in the linear regime there is no difference. Of course, if you go now for higher intensities, they start deviate. And if we go to 5 femtosecond, again something similar. The results are in good agreement, but now if you go to higher intensities, they start deviate. Okay.
So for the direct process, multiplying by this n factorial, or at least you showed earlier, should give you about the right rates.
Yes.
So is this the direct plus the sequential, or that there's some disorder between those that's caused by the chaotic pulse?
Why you mean this happens, or?
Is it the interaction of the direct with the sequential process that's causing this, or?
You mean this convergence? Okay, so I can explain you roughly the.
Can I ask you about
yes.
the graph? So why does your neon 7 plus start to drop at high intensities?
This one, because I have not included any volume expansion effects. But still, it's also the fact, it is also another situation here, is the following, that you have also the direct processes, which somehow, if you don't include the volume expansion effects, modify this, so it does not go, you know, like this, but they modify. You've got some dips there and so on. And we have seen that this is due to the direct channels, okay, how they combine for this particular system.
Does it go to 8 plus, or why does it go down?
Yeah, the 8 plus is saturating, right?
And the 8 plus is the terminal station
yes.
in the equations,
yes,
okay? Because for this photon frequency, the 1s doesn't feel that big. For that photon frequency and that intensity, okay? However, we should point out that in an experiment, all of these curves that go down would not go down, would just go up, it's the volume expansion. Okay, you see what I mean?
Sergey, I think asked for this, right?
Volume expansion.
Yeah.
I don't understand what volume expansion is.
There is this long story and
answer down.
You have
so no, I have to answer. I have to answer his question.
Here is a laser.
Sorry.
Focus. Okay? So you are, if your atom, if the atomic beam was this much, then everything would happen at this intensity. Okay? But the atomic beam is this big. So now, at this intensity, in this volume, everything is ionized. As you raise the intensity, atoms are ionized from these volumes, which are have smaller intensity. But as the center intensity increases, this intensity increases too. So you are seeing ionization from a volume that changes. I mean, the volume does not change,
but the
contribution, you know, from the periphery.
The effective volume.
Yes,
but still I have a following problem. If you have two neons, here it's one atom, fine. But if you have really a gas, if you ionize sufficiently many, there will be a Coulomb blockade because the electrostatic charge will be enormous, and this will change the ionization energies of those who are left in a lower charge.
But we are talking about a low-density gas here.
Yes, okay.
Low density gas.
So actually single atom.
Single atom, right. Even in the experiment, even when all of it going, it's low density. If you have a dense gas, many other things would happen. Okay?
And the terms are removed, I think, right?
Here is that your neon 3 is still going up, but neon 7, which is much harder to ionize, is already going down. So I understand that eventually all the intermediate stages will go down. Yeah. But on this graph, the neon 3 is still going up.
If it strikes back, the terminal
neon 7 is
the terminal neon 8 saturation, so to speak, strikes back first on the neon 7, then on 6, 5.
So, okay, so it's the 6 to 7, which is the slow stage, and everything else is faster.
6 to 7, the non-linearity increases.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, George, but this volume expansion, which is it's a fact of life, and when we do work that we try to match experiments, this goes into the calculation. So these equations must also be integrated over the volume with the appropriate volume that you can get from the experimentalists if you are lucky, or otherwise you have to use a model.
Okay, so there is a question left, I think. Why we have such a behavior here? Okay, so now it is basically as if we say that when we solve these equations, right, and we average over many trajectories, yeah, then in the linear regime we obtain the result that we obtain when we propagate similar equations but with n factorial sigma, right? And here f is now this, correct? So now this is, to simplify I think, as if we say when we average the real equations, it is basically the solutions depend on this. Yeah? Which in general is different than what we have with these solutions. That is, okay? But it seems, okay, for this linear regime, that this indeed the correlation holds. One way to understand this is the following, that if you combine the idea that you start the direct processes from the neutral atom, you get directly to the higher atoms, then you see immediately that this decorrelation holds, because for smaller densities this is not changed significantly, right? You can get it out. And then now for this sequential it's a bit more tricky, but still it seems that for very small intensities, let's say the jth atom, the population of the jth ion is small, so you can say this is negligible, but here is of some importance, right? But you can assume that this depends, it's very small, it decorrelates from this. Mathematical now, it's just there is no specific.
And this what he said just is valid for this particular example.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, one way to look at it, suppose you solve these differential equations, okay? You get complicated expressions for each ionic species. And on the right side, you have combinations of intensities and populations. So take the averages now. You cannot say that I decorrelate the atom, right?
But here it seems that it is possible.
To show that it works, may not work in another example.
And again, if one wants to do real simulations to simulate a particular experiment, then there is a problem that even if you do this decorrelation, you don't know the average pulse, okay? So if you take average over many pulses, what is the distribution? Here I know it because I did it by hand, yeah? If you don't know it, again you have a big uncertainty, okay? So you don't know precisely what the symbols here are. But this remains to be seen whether such a convergence is valid also for other atoms, for other systems, and so on.
What would you expect if you would include the channels which you ionization which you discarded? Because after, let's say, from every step you could, which you went direct, you could continue sequential.
Yeah.
What would you expect? I mean, it would go faster, probably.
Well, we believe that these are not important, that's why you dropped them. So we hope that if we include them, they will not change the results, okay?
Because for large field intensity,
yeah,
the number of atoms in, say, Ne plus 3 will be not so small.
Exactly, but already you have a deviation here, okay? They deviate. So we understand this, why this happens, is the reason you said. But here, because all the ions are very small, okay, and it is only the neutral which gives population to the direct processes. And here the decorrelation is clear why it happens. I showed earlier to Sergei with this, okay? It's the same thing. Here apparently this is very small in order to make any difference, okay?
It's still a logarithmic scale, so it's really...
Yeah. So, this is all I had, I think. Right. If there are any...
So there's a question there.
Ah, yes.
So now we talked a lot about experiment. How does this now compare to experiment?
Well, I don't know if they have done. Do they have an experiment at Neon 93D?
There is one experiment that Richter has published. But for this atom, the only thing is given
it's
is
time of flight
spikes.
Yeah, time of flight. You cannot
quantitative analysis from a graph that has time of flight spikes. He has not done power dependencies. The only atom in which he has done power dependencies is xenon.
Xenon, yeah.
And that has been treated theoretically. So there is need for data.
Yeah.
If I may add something about this volume expansion business, because it has led to all sorts of things. This is particularly crucial. Oh, first of all, two things. There is a way, a very tricky experimental way, to look only in this central region. And there are a couple of cases where this has been done. Compass group in Garching had developed a system, Schroeder actually was there. And then that they did some measurements there. And then that machine, whatever it was shipped to Crete in the 90s. And there were some experiments which used that. But I don't know of any other cases where this can be done. But this is particularly crucial, you know, if you do, like people do, experiments with two lasers, you know, pump, probe, or there, you know, you overlap. I mean, you do your calculations, you predict a certain result for such and such a power of the pump and such a power of the probe. But in the experiment, there is this volume thing there. And because the two lasers do not overlap for the intensities you want. And then this has led to all sorts of non-observable effects, which should have been. So it's something that has always been, has to be taken into account.
You stressed that you chose a particular model for your noise. So how strongly does your ionization yield now depend on the model for the noise you chose?
As I told you, I am aware of only two papers which generate somehow such a type of noise. Okay, I used one model here, and I used it because it helped me to produce noise which is exponentially correlated and noise which is Gaussian correlated. As far as this part is concerned, it does not make a difference. I showed you in this simpler graph. One is for Gaussian, and the other is for exponential correlation. Okay, the symbols, as you see, they match. Now, if you are telling me how good my number generator is, random number generator is, well, I explained to you in terms of the convergence of the correlation functions and the energies here and so on. So the only that uncertainty that remains is, you know, you change the correlation function, how these ion yields change. I explained to you in terms of Lorentzian and Gaussian. Well, I could check more, but.
But presumably, if your separation of averaging peak works, then that means that the particular details of your distribution function should not matter at all, because otherwise this trick wouldn't work.
Yeah, I mean basically for these enhancements here and so on, it's clear, as Sergei said, that what matters is the distribution of the intensity. So whatever you change, if the distribution of the intensity is exponential, you will always get such a factor of R factorial in the linear regime enhancement. Yeah, this is one thing. Now, similar arguments hold for here. Okay, but I cannot give you right now more. I think for this particular problem, my impression is that the system does not resolve the details of the correlation function. It depends basically on the energy distribution and the intensity distribution. But you may consider other systems which really resolve the correlation function. There they will depend on what you are using.
Okay.
So this would be the case if you had the resonance with bound states, and you had Rabi oscillations. But then you would need the laser that is not very wide, but in the optical regime, these things have appeared. But, so then, if you had resonance with bound states, they would be sensitive to Rabi.
Would an Auger process? If you had an Auger process, would that change things? Because that should be sensitive to the short time radiation.
Okay, we should say that for this particular example, Auger doesn't play much of a role.
But in principle.
If you do have Auger, now Auger is a decay. Is a decay independent of the field of the species. This has to be put in the equations if it's important, and has been we'll put it in other systems.
Yeah.
But
what I'm saying is that if you have if you go for a sequential fibrillada, your probability of your processes would change. Say if you have a particular intensity spike. When you come up to the ladder here, and then you can go further. But if you now have an Auger process which have characteristic time, then this might interfere with what happens before and after. So you will cut off certain intensities, and the averaging will become non-separable, right?
It has to be done. It has to be done. If I go back to my example, if I solved all of these equations, right, and they included Auger, this means that these expressions would involve this process you are talking about.
So just
about.
Okay, dependence on the power will become more complicated.
It has to be done. Yeah. It has to be done. It's not important in this example, but it has to be done. Yeah. I should say this is the first example where we really did in everything we published so far, we just put n factorial there. Okay? This is the first example that we really did from first principles, the modeling. And now this has to be used in other examples.
So I've said on occasion I don't have any answers for this field. I only have questions.
Yeah.
And now I have a question that I'm not sure I even understand the question, but let me try and see what it is. Here in this analysis, the cross sections for deterministic field and chaotic field are the same.
Yes, correct.
So the question arises, what photo properties of materials, let's be general first, photo properties of materials will not satisfy that condition. So it's not just the statistics of the field that comes.
Look, as far as...
And my guess is, I don't know right now, as I say, I don't have an answer, so what's your guess?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how the... and whether, you know, the cross-sections are defined in solid-state physics or other materials. But as far as atoms are concerned, the cross-section depends basically on some matrix elements, okay? The difference in energies as you go up on the photon energy. It does not depend on whether you have fluctuating field or deterministic field or whatever. So for atoms, as soon as you do this work, you have to find the correlation function cross section once and for all for the particular atom, for the particular transition. So that's all.
When you say cross section, you're thinking of absorption, correct?
Yes.
So kind of the next step is the angular distribution of outgoing electrons, still an absorption process.
Yeah, I don't know how this depends.
More sensitive to the nature of the field.
I don't know how the electron distribution is.
But what will happen if your characteristic time for the process is becomes longer than your coherence time? Then surely you would have the cross sections which would depend on the details of your field rather than just on the statistics. So if you have, I'm not saying it's possible, I'm just asking hypothetical questions.
No, but I'm trying to understand what you're saying.
So let's say you have a process that it takes
much longer
long for electron to leave, for example, that your laser field deviates significantly from a cosine, from say, a pure cosine wave during that time. So that the properties of flotation of your field start to matter. can your cross sections change in that situation? Will it matter at all, or can you just still use the same thing? I don't know whether it makes sense, even though the question makes sense.
As long as there are two conditions under which this is valid. One is that the field is sufficiently weak, small quadrilateral energy, sufficiently long in terms of cycles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? Exactly. So what, okay, if the process takes a form comparable to the Andy Moore of your field, but what happens to change, right?
But this process, which is ionization or excitation, occurs as long as the field is on. I mean, if you take a very weak source, a lamp, and submit an atom to that, right? Mm-hmm. The lamp can be extremely, extremely weak and extremely long.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Now, if you leave it, take simple ionization to make things specific.
Mm-hmm.
Simple photon ionization. And I have a weak source, and I leave it there forever.
Mm-hmm.
I have a transition probability per unit time with exponential decay. That's not going to change, is it?
No. That's not what I mean. But what I mean is, let's say it takes your if you try to look at the ionization process in time, then it takes certain time for the electron to depart, right? If your field changes during that time, then the cross section, then what you observe will depend on it, right? So then you cannot simply take VCW cross sections and use walls. You have to do something else.
Yeah, you have very short paths. You cannot use it. I mean, that's exactly what you see. I mean, when you do the TDSE solution and you compare to the perturbative solution, of course, the perturbation theory, not only because of the intensity, but also because of the pulse duration, can break down. It's a long pulse limit. I mean, you have enough cycles, as you said.
Yeah. So if you don't have that,
of course not.
If it's a short pulse, it has to be a short pulse, then all of this is off. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm not talking about short. But short pulse will have to be a few cycles. One, two, three cycles, whatever you want. Okay? But any 10 cycles or more.
Yeah.
It's a long pulse.
Sure. Okay.
And this is, I don't see what else.
So these are the conditions.
Okay. Yeah. If and when the FEL produces pulses, which are two or three cycles, then a different approach.
Or spikes
that are two or three cycles, then this has to be two.
Okay.
Sure, absolutely.
Thanks again.
Right.